This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
And time to say good morning from Arizona, as we mentioned earlier in our conversation with Matt Bubala. Orion Samuelson saying good morning to you for our weekly get-together on the Saturday morning show in what has been a very eventful and busy week. Beyond the presidential election, we had our 73rd annual gathering of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting in Kansas City, the opportunity to renew long-standing friendships and relationships with farm broadcasters and people in the agribusiness community from across the United States. And as we mentioned, Max Armstrong, elected president of the National Association of Farm Broadcasting, and we're very proud of that and certainly want to congratulate him. And during the day on Thursday, a very busy day because we had representatives of agribusiness companies and agricultural organizations at our convention and had the opportunity to sit down and visit with many of them. And I'm going to share some of those conversations this morning, ranging all the way from the Billy Graham of the ethanol industry to the president of the American Farm Bureau Federation. David Lehman from the CME Group will be joining us this morning. So a busy time ahead, and we hope you can stay with us here on the Saturday morning show. Besides some other records being set in the past two or three weeks, CME Group set a record on the day after the election. We'll talk about that, but we'll talk about the future of the renewable energies industry as well. So all of that coming up. First, we'll get to Bob Dineen of the Renewable Fuels Association. Then we'll talk to David Lehman of the CME Group in Chicago when we continue here on the Saturday morning show. We always welcome the opportunity to talk to Bob Dineen, who is the president and the CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association, and one of the most enthusiastic supporters I have ever known for renewable energy. And that hasn't slowed down with you, has it?
No, if you can't be enthusiastic about what this industry does and working for the farmers and the people that I do, there's something the matter with you. So, yeah, I remain enthusiastic.
Well, we have seen strong support from Secretary of Agriculture Tom Vilsack. He has been strongly behind this. But what are we going to see under the Trump administration, do you think?
Well, first of all, without a doubt, Tom Vilsack has been probably the single most passionate and effective advocate for farmers generally and ethanol specifically we've ever had. Yeah. And he will be missed in Washington. But I will tell you this, that President-elect Trump, he understands the importance of value-added agriculture as well. He has, throughout the campaign, expressed strong support for ethanol generally, but the renewable fuel standard specifically. He went to ethanol plants. He kicked the tires. He walked away from those experiences understanding what ethanol meant as a fuel, but also understanding what ethanol meant in terms of value-added agriculture and what it meant to the local economy. He is for domestic energy. Now, he's for all energy. That's fine. But he understands that domestically produced ethanol has got to be a part of our energy mix.
The export market has been interesting to watch as far as ethanol is concerned, and it seems to continue to grow.
Indeed. We will export probably 950 million to a billion gallons of ethanol this year, but we'll also export about a third of our distiller's feed.
Yes.
So the export market is critical to the bottom line of an ethanol plant.
Renewable fuel standard, they always seem to be 2 years behind coming out with the numbers on that. Do you think that'll change?
I do, and I think it's going to change this year, finally. The Environmental Protection Agency has really seemed committed to meeting this year's deadline. So by November 30th, I anticipate they will come out with a final rule. Now, when they proposed it in May, they were still 200 million gallons below what the statute says. Yep. And hopefully since May, they've had a chance to dig out the statute and read it again and recognize that, no, 14.8 billion gallon wasn't the number. It was 15 billion gallons for conventional fuels. And they've had an opportunity to look at the record, because we provided them plenty of information to conclude they can go to the statutory level and there'll be no problem. In fact, the Department of Energy has given them information that because of rising gasoline demand, there is no problem, even using EPA's own flawed methodology. And if, for whatever reason, EPA does not go to 15 billion gallons of conventional biofuels, it is nothing more than a cold slap in the face to the American farmer as this administration walks out the door. It would be inexcusable.
The oil industry continues to hammer away at it, but they use it.
They do. In fact, today, they not only use it, Orion, they produce it.
Yeah.
You know, companies like Flint Hills and Valero, you know, the largest refinery in the company, is also the third largest ethanol producer. And so, you know, there's not as much acrimony, really, between the refiners and the ethanol producer. Now, the oil companies, those that just drill and then sell their oil to refiners and elsewhere, yeah, they remain steadfastly opposed. But if you're just in the gasoline business, you want octane. Yeah. Ethanol is the lowest cost, highest quality octane on the planet. So refiners, they want to use you. And consumers, they'd love to have higher volumes of ethanol in their fuel because it means more octane at a lower cost. If the marketplace is allowed to operate as it should, consumers are going to choose the higher octane, lower cost fuel. And that's what we really need to see. And that's where I think the Trump administration might be most helpful, because Trump has said he wants to reduce the regulatory burden on businesses.
Right.
Well, there are a whole host of regulations that are holding the ethanol industry back. And if you were to remove some of the regulations on E15, on gasoline marketers that are have no air quality benefit, no consumer benefit, only increased cost, then you're going to empower consumers to choose those fuels and allow marketers to offer those fuels. And it will grow this marketplace like nobody's business. So that's why I am hopeful, not just for the industry, but for consumers, that we will see increased opportunities down the road.
We talk about E15. We talk about E85. We talk about pumps where you can set a variety of the ethanol blend. Are we making progress on that?
We're making a lot of progress.
Yeah.
Part of the reason is the industry several years ago came together in a program called Prime the Pump. And, you know, they pulled their resources and they went out to major marketers and they said, look, we know there are costs associated with changing the infrastructure to put these pumps in. We're going to help you with that. And so you've had, you know, major marketers like Sheetz on the East Coast or Minoco in Minnesota come and go in Iowa and across the Midwest that have said, great, with your help, we're going to make this move. And when they do so, they find that consumers are gravitating toward those fuels, and it has been a tremendous success. And hopefully we're able to continue that program. But again, you remove some of the regulatory burdens, and maybe the industry doesn't have to go about, you know, that kind of a program, because the marketplace will drive those kind of investments.
Always a pleasure, sir, to hear your enthusiasm for the product. Bob Dineen, who is President and CEO of the Renewable Fuels Association. Dave Lehman is Managing Director of Commodity Research and Product Development for the CME Group, headquartered in Chicago. And before we talk about anything else, Election Day, you had an all-time contract record trade?
The following day, yes, Orion. Yesterday, the day following the election in the U.S., we had a 44.5 million contract day. That beat our previous record of 39 point some million contracts, mostly in our financial markets, in the interest rate and equity markets, but FX as well. We almost doubled our current record, our previous record in Japanese yen U.S. dollar foreign exchange contract. So, yeah, big day, a lot of uncertainty that the market's trying to understand what the new the election results, kind of surprising election results, meant for the financial markets.
Agricultural contracts traded in that market?
We had a big day in our agricultural markets as well, Orion. We didn't set any records, but the USDA November crop report raised the yields again in corn and soybeans. So as the adage goes, big crops tend to get bigger as we get through the harvest and get more refined estimates out of USDA. So had quite an active day in the agricultural markets as well yesterday.
We have talked several times about the ag economy barometer, but can you bring us up to date on how it's moving?
Yeah, that's an exciting new kind of broad ag economy index, if you will, that we're collaborating with Purdue University to create this ag economy barometer. There, Purdue is serving 400 producers each month. We just had a monthly, the October report came out early this month and showed a decline in producers' sentiment, if you will, or expectations. These kind of track commodity prices, as you can imagine. And as commodity prices have come down due to the big, big crop, producers' expectations for the ag economy have declined as well.
For one who came to Chicago when the Mercantile Exchange with the butter and egg market, and we weren't even talking about futures and options at that time, but talk to me about options and the role it could play for farmers.
Yeah, that's been a real important new tool, Orion. I came to Chicago Board of Trade in the late 80s, and we had just introduced options at that time. They were previously banned by Congress until about early 1980s. Those tools have expanded. They're really insurance-like products, so they give producers the ability to lock in a floor or a ceiling if you're a consumer, but yet not lose out on a higher price if you're a producer or a lower price if you're a consumer. So what we've been focusing on are refining those tools, giving them weekly expirations that are used to hedge events like crop reports or elections, and then also shorter dated options on new crop futures that give the producer a way to target risk management tools around planting season, pollination season, early harvest season at a lower cost. And in this lower price environment, managing costs is really going to be very important.
I know the CME Group is working on the concern over cattle futures, and it's ongoing. We're continuing.
That work is ongoing, Orion. We're working very closely with the industry, primarily with NCBA, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association working groups, to see if we can make some changes in our contracts. We've done things like taken away the afternoon trading session, introduced livestock contracts into our messaging efficiency program, which monitors the messages that go into our electronic trading platform. Looking at things around price limits, we expanded price limits late last year. So that's ongoing. We're very thankful that the industry is, you know, so willing to work with us to see how we can manage the volatility in that market.
Well, they want that market, but they do have their concerns. So
yeah.
We're a global agriculture. How global is CME Group today?
Well, global is we have global benchmarks, as you know, corn, wheat, soybeans. Those are really viewed and used globally. If you go to China or go to Brazil and ask what the price of soybeans is, they'll quote it as a premium or a discount to CME or CBOT.
Right.
Along that line, we just launched a new European Union wheat contract in September. It's deliverable, physically delivered around the port of Rouen in northern France, their main export port. Maybe not as relevant to the U.S. market as you might think initially, but it gives the market greater visibility into values in a very large export market, competing export market in the European Union. We're happy we're trading about 2,000 contracts a day and have open interest up at 3,000, 3,200 contracts in just a couple of months. So we're really excited about the initial success there.
So is it companies or producers in Europe that are making use of the market?
It's companies that export wheat out of the European Union. It's co-ops that buy wheat from producers They're the primary operators of the delivery facilities, or the cooperatives, and so we had to work really closely with them and with the French tax and other authorities to make sure they could participate. There are delivery facilities, approved delivery facilities, so yeah, it's a pretty good mix so far.
Any new contracts in the pipeline at CME Group?
There are always new contracts in our pipeline. In terms of cattle, as I think you know, we've said we're looking at that contract top to bottom.
Right.
That may move to an index, a cash settled index, if we can't get the delivery mechanism modified to better reflect the cash market. We also have some additional wheat contracts that we're looking at, and in some additional option contracts in the corn, soybean, and wheat market that are on our horizon as well. So we'll have to stay tuned for those.
So the one constant at the CME Group is change.
That's a good way to put it, Orion. Yeah, you mentioned the Chicago Butter and Egg Exchange, and when I came to CBOT in the late 80s, you know, we were just beginning to launch options then. So yeah. Things change. The big change, of course, has been the move away from open outcry trading to electronic trading, and the closure of the futures pits last year, and options now remain on the floor. So, technology has driven a lot of change, and I think what we'll see in the next 5 to 10 years is probably going to, make what we've seen in the last 5 years pale in comparison.
Well, stay on top of it, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Orion. My pleasure to be here today.
Dave Lehman of the CME Group, Chicago. All right, Roger, and I can tell you it's 67 degrees here in Scottsdale, Arizona this morning, and a desert moon that's approaching full come Monday. Well, a busy week, as we have been talking about, on the national scene, on our farm broadcasting scene. And right now, I say welcome to Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I am Orion Samuelson, with a sigh of relief, saying, finally, it's over. But now we're getting ready for the holidays around the Samuelson home, and we are expecting visitors throughout the holiday season. So the last thing we want to worry about is plumbing problems. That means I'll be sure to have a bottle of Wink Hair Clog Blaster handy to keep our bathroom drains running clean, safe on all pipes and septic systems. Wink Hair Clog Blaster pours through running, standing water, breaking down hair and soap scum. So check out all the fine products at wink.com. That's WHINK.com. Finally, it's over. After a 2-year campaign of name calling and opponent bashing at every level of office, we know now who will move into the White House in January, but what we don't know is who will be the members of the president's cabinet. And for farmers and ranchers, the choice for Secretary of Agriculture will be critical. A discussion of agriculture was virtually absent in the campaign, except when it came to trade and trade agreements, and, well, those discussions were negative, showing no understanding of the importance of agricultural trade, not just to our ag economy, but to the U.S. economy. So the Secretary of Agriculture will have to be strong enough to convince the president that agriculture and trade are vitally important to our very existence. That gives me also the opportunity to tip my hat to the man who will leave the Secretary's corner office in the USDA headquarters building, Tom Vilsack. It's not easy being in that office because critics come out of the woodwork. I was one of those critics when he became Secretary. I thought he paid too much attention to feeding the world with production units like Michelle's White House Garden and ignored commercial family farm agriculture. But as he moved further into the job, he realized we need all the ag production units, and when he leaves the office, he will be the first Secretary of Agriculture to serve 2 full terms since Orville Freeman did it in the Kennedy-Johnson administration in the 60s. We will miss his strong support of agricultural trade, his programs to encourage young people to choose agricultural careers, and his never-ending support for renewable energy. I will miss his integrity, his knowledge of his subject when addressing one of the many different production groups in agriculture, and being just a nice guy who always had time to say hello. Every year in December for the past 39 years, I have sat down with the Secretary of Agriculture for our year-end radio TV interview, and Tom Vilsack has been one of the best at looking back and looking ahead. We will do our last interview in December. It will be a sad day, but I thank him for doing a good job and wish him well. My thoughts on Samuelson Says. A presentation of the Tribune Radio Networks. We're coming up to 20 minutes before 6 o'clock. Still have to visit with the president of the American Farm Bureau Federation and Max Armstrong, standing by to talk markets with our market guest this morning that he visited with on Thursday down at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City. So we'll be joining Max and his guest when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show.
Our market guest this weekend on the heels of the November crop report is Steve Nicholson, grain and oilseed analyst and economist with Rabo AgriFinance. A shocker. If anybody thought it was just going to be a status quo crop report, they were sorely mistaken, weren't they?
They were absolutely sorely mistaken. And I think it was, and I have to tell you, I was the optimist in the office on corn yields all along. Not surprised that corn yields went up, because everyone you talked with was, yeah, the yields are there. And as you know, we've talked several times over the last couple of months, and the analysts were all talking, oh, the yield's not there. But you talk to farmers, how's your yield? That's good. Is it really good? Yeah, it's pretty good. And so you got the view that that yield is really out there, and corn is there. The beans have been not a surprise at all. We thought if we had a surprise on beans, it was if they were even higher. You get that 53, 54, you know, bushels per acre. So I don't think there was no surprises in this for me. The market obviously was a little surprised. The market reacted very negatively to that. But I think, you know, you have to keep in mind at the time we got the report, we just finished an election, and there was a lot of uncertainty, I think, in markets in general. So I think all that kind of came together and conspired against the market.
Big yield numbers, especially individual state numbers. You know, the corn yield of what, 202 in Illinois, 199 in Iowa?
Huge, huge. And that's why you look at that and think that's where we're going to grow corn. And that's when you look at acreage, when you start to think about next year, and people say, well, we have to reduce acres, which is true. We do need to reduce acres to bring the balance sheets back in a little better balance than they are right now. But you're not going to get them in states like Iowa and Illinois. You're going to get them in states that are outside or the periphery of the Corn Belt. Of, you know, you get into eastern Ohio or you get into Dakotas or Kansas, and you probably that's where you'll see that change in acreage. It's not going to be in Iowa and Illinois for the very reason you just stated. You get 200 bushel average yield. That's just unbelievable. Because you and I, when we grew up, boy, if you had 120 or 150, you were thinking, wow, I really got a corn crop here. And now it's... In Iowa, you have friends that go, if you don't get 225 or 250, they're like disappointed. It's like, wow, what a change.
You spoke of those fringe states. Some of the gain in this corn crop came in the Dakotas, did it not?
Yeah, it did. And one of the things, if you look at, and we'll pick on North Dakota, it's a great state, but you look at what's happened in North Dakota the last decade, you know, if you kind of look at that map and you sort of use a term of, you know, if you take an inch out from that eastern border, and that's kind of where traditionally where they had planted their crops, and you look over the last 10 years, that number now is like 2 or 3 inches away from the eastern border, and so they've had a huge expansion in acreage there. But we do see in the Dakotas, for example, we're starting to see a lot more diversity in the crops being planted, back somewhat to tradition. More edible beans, more peas. You know, the sugar beets are about flat with, you know, they're not too much change from a year ago, and that's other issues in sugar beets, but we're starting to see more crops, durum wheat, it's always been planted there, but more crops planted like in the Dakotas.
When we've gotten some of these bearish reports of late, it seems like their impact has been not so long-lasting, surprisingly brief. Fairly soon we see a bounce back.
Absolutely. That's a great point, and I think that's something we have to think about. You know, one of the things that's probably helped us this fall is, first of all, this harvest has been a little bit elongated, so that's helped the markets. Also, we've had this humongous export pace right off the bat in the crop year for all three, you know, corn, wheat, and soybeans. And now we've seen corn and wheat kind of come back into their more traditional patterns in the last couple of weeks. Soybeans are still going out the door very high, but I think that's helped kind of the logistics side. It's also helped also keep kind of market up a little bit, you know, kind of support the underlying futures. But having said that, futures basis is doing all that work underneath it. I mean, we see basis levels that we haven't seen for numbers and numbers of years.
There's some good plays available there to go.
That's right. And so you've got to be able to deal with that. And if you're, you know, if you're end users, you know, this is probably your opportunity. The producer's probably more apt and probably better served to wait a little bit before he, you know, moves that crop and, you know, prices any further more crop.
We have the storage to do that, don't we?
We do have the storage. You know, I've had several inquiries about, is there any logistics issues or storage issues? And I said, I haven't heard anything. And we joke about, in my home state of Iowa, you know, you kind of see the geography changes time of year. It gets a little more hilly. But you still have them out there. So, yeah, it's been fine.
Thank you so much for joining us this weekend. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Max. Good to be here.
Steve Nicholson, he's with Rabo AgriFinance, talking to Max this morning and his viewpoint of the marketplace following the November crop report. A visit with, Zippy Duval, president of the American Farm Bureau Federation, coming up when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. Zippy Duval is president of the American Farm Bureau Federation, and in January he will complete his first term, his first year. About the same time Donald Trump will start his first year in the White House. Let's talk about your feelings about the election outcome.
Well, you know, we all across America was very interested in seeing some change come to Washington. And you know, as an organization, we really don't take sides when into political races. So we went out and encouraged our grassroots to get involved in the process, pick the candidate they think was best for their families and their businesses, and make sure that they were out there taking part in the process. And boy, did they do that. We are so proud of rural America coming out and making a difference in this election. So Mr. Trump is coming to town, and he and I had an opportunity to speak right after I was elected. Oh. I would love to have that opportunity to speak to him now. Maybe that might happen. But it brings excitement. A lot of the things that he talks about are issues that American farmers are being concerned about. And we're real interested in being able to sit down at the table and have a discussion with his transition team about how his administration is going to affect agriculture in the future.
During the campaign, Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton didn't say many nice things about trade and agricultural trade. Matter of fact, they didn't say much about agriculture. Is that a concern?
Well, it is a concern, but we all know that Mr. Trump is a businessman, and businessmen understand how important trade is to business across America. Agriculture depends on trade so much. And the future markets that agriculture is going to be working for are those markets outside of our borders. So we've been successful in trade treaties in the past, and we look forward to doing that again, and sitting down with the Trump team and making sure that we continue to win in trade treaties. But American farmers are also concerned about the rest of the people in America, and we want trade treaties to be fair to everyone.
We've watched Secretary Vilsack be a strong supporter of renewable energy. Do you think that will continue?
Well, I understand that Mr. Trump's energy policy is very positive. He looks to capitalize on all sources of energy and renewable energy, and that's always a good place for American agriculture to be. You set a goal out in front of our people across America on their farms and ask them to do something, and they'll make it happen. And what's happened with ethanol and biodiesel has been a great success across rural America, and we'll answer the call to what our energy needs are, and we'll play the role that Mr. Trump wants us to play.
Let's take a moment to talk about your first year. Any surprises?
No, not really. You know, I knew I was coming in on an election year, and I knew it'd be difficult, and Washington would not be doing a lot. We spent a lot of time on GMO labeling and the cotton situation, and we've talked about the condition our farms and ranches are in, and look for ways to try to help them during this very difficult time. But this year has really been an opportunity for me to try to achieve or start achieving one of my personal goals in this job, and that is to make sure that I travel America and get out at the grassroots level and talk to our farmers and ranchers and see how these burning issues that are facing us, how it affects them in their region of the country. So in their absence, I can be a good voice for them. And it has been a tremendous year for me to be able to travel and a tremendous education for me to be able to be more aware of how these issues affect other areas of the country. Because I'm a southern boy and I know southern agriculture.
Right.
And I needed to go to the west and the northeast and in the Midwest. And it just has amazed me the opportunities, the excitement, and the passion in rural America as I've traveled it. And I look forward to representing each and every one of them. That's been my goal. I want to make sure that I can speak for a farmer regardless of what part of the country he's in.
Finally, you're traveling to Phoenix for the annual convention of American Farm Bureau. You scored a real coup with your featured speakers. Who are they?
We're going to have Archie Manning and his son Peyton with us to be our speaker there. And we're very excited about having the Manning family there and letting them talk about what hard work how hard work brings success. And farmers and ranchers know that better than anybody. They're out there on the farm working hard each and every day. And I tell my children as they grew up, there's a lot of things that get you places in this world. But hard work and good friends and faith in your Lord is right there in the core of that.
Well, we wish you well as you continue to serve the nation's farm, well, the nation and the world. Zippy Duval, who is president of the American Farm Bureau Federation.
If the constant pain in your hip or your knee keeps you from doing all the things that you want to do, man, it's time for you to feel better. And you can. Visit the Hip and Knee Center, where they've performed thousands of successful outpatient, minimally invasive joint replacements. They can make you feel new again. Now, what sets them apart is experience. Advanced techniques in hip and knee replacement are performed by experts who focus, refine, and perfect the patient experience. There's no general anesthesia, no catheters, no blood transfusions, and no restrictions. And recovery is measured in days to weeks, not months. Renowned joint replacement surgeon Dr. Sean W. Palmer, founder of the Hip and Knee Center, is a national instructor for surgeon training and among the most experienced anterior approach hip replacement surgeons in the entire nation. Patients arrive from across the country, even the world, for his expertise, results, and commitment to service. If you want to feel new again, you got to make the call. 1-866-FEEL-NEW. 1-866-FEEL-NEW or online, thehipandkneecenter.com.
Our thanks to Spike Codell, who joins us quite often here on WGN Radio. We're at 4 minutes before 6 o'clock news time. And before we leave you this morning, something that I just have to get off my chest because it has bothered me ever since Tuesday. It especially bothered me yesterday on Veterans Day. And that is the fact that those who are out demonstrating about the outcome of the election apparently haven't studied history or the U.S. Constitution. We hold an election every 4 years in this country to elect leadership. And when it's over, there is a winner and there is a loser. And after sort of suffering with the loss, we get back to work and we support the person who won and then get ready to work hard in 4 years. Well, actually, now the campaign runs 2 years, but then work hard to get whoever we back in the White House. Demonstrating isn't going to change that. And particularly turning cars over, setting fire to them, shutting down highways is not going to change the Constitution and the election of a new president here in the United States. So when the election is over, the losers go to work to make a success of their next candidate, and the winners go to work again to work for the nation. We talk a lot about baby boomers and we talk a lot about millennials, but I think we've also created another category in this country called the entitlement category. People who think because they live in the United States, they are entitled to a free college education. They are entitled to whatever they feel is necessary for them. And yesterday I was really bothered because of Veterans Day. the veterans who preserved the history and the right to do what we did on Tuesday, and the right to once again go to work for our candidate over the next 4 years. And the kind of demonstrating that I've seen will not change our Constitution, will not change history. And it seems to me you can make your point by the written and spoken word, but not by destroying communities, property, or impairing traffic and whatever else happens with a demonstration. Just because of our salute to veterans yesterday, why did we have to put up with that kind of activity as well? Because I think most of us saluted those veterans who preserved the right that we have in this country and that we tend to take for granted until you travel to other parts of the world. So demonstrators, grow up. Isn't going to change the outcome last Tuesday. And so we live with the new leadership for the next 4 years. Well, we're approaching the Thanksgiving Day trading week. That comes up in about a week and a half or so. And then we trade markets for 3.5 days during Thanksgiving week. And you might keep that in mind as well as we approach that time. Harvest pretty well over. Talking to farmers at our farm broadcasting convention in Kansas City. Pretty good harvest year for farmers all over the major producing areas of the Midwest. And we ought to be grateful, too, that they're able to provide the food in abundance to not only feed us, but to feed millions of other hungry people around the world. I guess that's enough for the Samuelson sermon this morning, and that brings us right up to 6 o'clock news time here on WGN Radio Chicago.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.